Sunday is that day when we gather together to deepen our spirituality and support each other in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning in our lives. If you are a visitor, we are delighted you are here. If you are interested in receiving further information, please fill out a visitor's card that can be found on the table at the back of the sanctuary. After service, please stay with us. We would love to get to know you. Whatever your faith, whatever your heritage, today you are part of our religious community. We keep up to date with church happenings through our newsletter, but each Sunday we generally have a few announcements to either highlight or add to that information. And what I have today, if I can uncover it here, next Sunday is second Sunday again exploring Article 2, and I'm looking forward to that. I think that's interesting stuff. On March 17th, we're having a town hall, State of the Church, and I really hope you guys come back for that because we're going to be talking about where we're going, what we're going to be doing, and I'm not going to tell you where we're going to be going. We're going to be talking about where you want to go because it's not the board's job to say, well, this is what we're going to do. It's the congregation's job to decide what they think we should be doing. So, but that's what we're going to be talking about and hopefully figuring out how to make it happen because we have people coming in with ideas about what we ought to be doing, and the board's not got the bandwidth to implement them, so we need help. And I'm going to talk about that some more later. On March 24th, my spouse, Lisa Johnson, is talking about Indiana criminal appeal, criminal law, the good, the bad, and the ugly. She's an appellate criminal law attorney, which means she knows all about the trials because she looks at all the mistakes the trial attorneys made. So. And then March 31st, Deborah Brown. Deb is talking about total eclipse of the sun, how to understand, enjoy, and prepare for the event of a lifetime. And does anybody else have anything they want to announce?
Game night on Wednesday from 5 to 9 p.m. right here at the church on Wednesday. That is this Wednesday.
Thank you, Julian.
You're welcome.
He's his own PA system.
Should I use the microphone?
Absolutely.
Somebody said that if we don't do it into the mic, they don't pick it up somewhere.
Yeah, on the recording, but so that's more for during
the sermon. Okay.
Questions and stuff, I think.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jeff. Everybody has probably seen your pledge request letters. I'd like to get them in by the end of this week. So then I can add them up and remind the people that haven't yet done it and go to their house and visit them to get the pledge. Me and my friend Rocco. But no, yes, please fill out your pledge cards and increase it from last year. Thank you.
Anyone else? In the spirit of fellowship and community, please take a moment to greet those around you.
We start our prelude. I just want to know, it's really fun to do this, and if anybody has never tried it and would like to, you too can offer to be a service leader. Now, you also have to say some other things, but you do get to ring the gong. And so, or there's an official word for what this is. Yeah, but it's pretty nice. You just give it a good... Yeah, it's just, yeah. So if you've never gotten the opportunity to do that, you can get that opportunity if you'd like to. Nancy's going to tell us about our prelude and how we're going to do it today.
Feeling the spirit. Huh? Yeah. in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered here in one strong body. Gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of this hour. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered here in one strong body. Gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of this hour. Gathered here in one strong body. Gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered here in one strong body. Gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near.
So, you know, spirit, draw near. That's what we were doing. Okay, good.
Thank you, Nancy. Our chalice lighting today is coming from the wind. On this day, as with so many Sundays, we come in from the whirling world, the wind, the bright sun, the push and pull of tides and time, from the tumult of global news and local stories, the pain we hear, the demands on our spirit, the do this now culture we live in. We come into this literal sanctuary from that windstorm, the rush of speeding drivers on the roadways, the rustling silence that fills some of our homes, the vastness of a once busy and perhaps now quieter house. All of this can leave us feeling stirred and unsettled. When we give our attention to what's going on around and beyond us in this throbbing world, we can feel wind blown. We need places where we can come and find our grounding once again. Come in from the wind. Come in from the whirl. Come in from the world. May this be a place where we can experience genuine stillness, even just for a few moments. May this be a place that we can count on every time we turn onto Jefferson Street, every time we walk up those stairs or that ramp through these doors, seeking our congregational home. May we feel pulled into a restorative time of energetic peace. May this be a place of learning, of nourishment. May this be a community that generates a new zest in us for the dynamic beauty of this world. Come, let us worship together. Come in from the wind. We, the Unitarian Universalist Community Church of Hendricks County, are a vibrant spiritual community with many facets, united together by our covenant. I invite you now, if you would like, to rise and embody our spirit for the affirmation of our covenant, the words of which can be found in your order of service. I also realized they are also found on that poster we have in the other room, so if we ever need them big, we can just grab them from there and bring them in to be able to see them. Yeah. So join me if you would like. We proudly carry the flame of religious freedom. We respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. We encourage each other to spiritual growth that makes for peace, ethical living, and community service. This is our covenant. Amen. You may be seated. Before we move into our reading, I want to remind you of the power of the words, "This is our covenant." The covenant that we read here weekly is one that was created and that stays a living covenant because of the people who come together and speak it within our church. I hope that you take those words and think on them as we do our message later that Annie's going to provide us in thinking about our church. I hope that you think about those words as you consider what you might bring forward to our town hall in a few weeks. And I hope you think about those words as you consider what you might pledge towards the livelihood of our church in this next year. Our covenant is only a living covenant if we make it a living covenant. Our reading today is "A Seed Knows How to Wait." This is an excerpt from Lab Girl by Hope Jarrett. A seed knows how to wait. Most seeds wait for several years before starting to grow. A cherry seed can wait for 100 years with no problem. What exactly each seed is waiting for is known only to that seed. Some unique trigger combination of temperature, moisture, light, and many other things is required to convince the seed to jump off the deep end and take its chance, to take its one and only chance to grow. A seed is alive while it waits. Every acorn on the ground is just as alive as the 300-year-old oak tower, or oak tree that towers over it. Neither the seed nor the old oak is growing. They are both just waiting. Their waiting differs, however, in that the seed is waiting to flourish, while the tree is only waiting to die. When you go into a forest, you probably tend to look up at the plants that have grown so much taller than you ever could. You probably don't look down, where just beneath your single footprint sits between 100 and 1,000 seeds, each one alive and waiting. When you are in the forest, for every tree that you see, there are no less than 3 million more trees waiting in the soil, fervently wishing to be. When the embryo within a seed starts to grow, it basically just stretches out of its doubled over waiting posture, elongating into official ownership of the form that it assumed years ago. The hard coat that surrounds a peach pit, a sesame, or a mustard seed, or a walnut shell mostly exists to prevent this expansion. In the laboratory, we simply scratch the hard coat and add a little water, and it's enough to make almost any seed grow. I must have cracked thousands of seeds over the years, and yet the next day's green never fails to amaze me. Something so hard can be so easy if you just have a little help. In the right place, under the right conditions, you can finally stretch out into what you're supposed to be. Each beginning is the end of a waiting. We are each given exactly one chance to be. Each of us is both the impossible and the inevitable. Every replete tree was first a seed that waited. At this time, we are going to do hymn 318, "We Would Be One." If you would like to rise in body or spirit, you may, or if you would like to remain seated, whatever is easiest for you in your singing. And I believe, Nancy, I'm assuming based off of your position that you are going to be accompanying us on the piano for this one. Yeah. Are you doing an intro or are we starting immediately? Okay, if you will start, when you start singing, we will start singing.
When I start singing, not when I start playing, right?
Whichever one you want us to do.
Okay, I'm going to do an intro, and then I'll start singing.
Okay.
So you'll know when to start.
Thank you.
We would be one.
you. You may be seated. At this time, I would like to welcome up Annie Johnson to lead our message, Connections and Reciprocity, Roots, Leaves, Trees, and Churches.
Well, what I want to do this morning is use a series of metaphors and analogies, and maybe a simile or two, to change, to transform how we think about church. This is my third year on the board, so I have listened to Joel tell us for 2 years not to worry about getting people in the door, instead worry about keeping them coming back. And I do worry about keeping them coming back, but I have to admit I still worry about getting them in the door. This sermon was partially inspired by Joel's admonition. There are two basic human needs. Everyone needs to fit in, to belong, to have roots. And everyone needs to stick out, to be free to act, to use their ideas and energy for good. Our fitting in, our roots, our belonging, keep us stable and feed us intellectually and emotionally, which gives us an opportunity to learn about our community so that in sticking out we gain purpose, and we are able to act in a way to make our world, or even the world, a better place. UU Minister Shelley Page, in her sermon, Strengthening Our Roots, talks about the aspen trees out in Utah where her church is located. She says, "Each aspen stands tall with its own uniqueness, the pattern on its bark, the branches at its crown, the lichens and scars that mark its life. Each aspen stands tall in a group that is actually all the same organism, all the same tree with many different trunks. Each aspen is rooted in place with a common root system that is shared by the entire grove. And when an older aspen dies off, fresh new growth is generated. And the aspen grove lives on and on and on and on. Each aspen does its part to nourish the whole. Its leaves create food that nourish the roots, so the community holds strong and the interconnected roots feed all of the trees. We as a church are in many ways like the aspens. We each have our scars, some physical, some emotional, maybe even some religious, that mark the journeys of our lives. We each choose to stick out in our own ways, and even though any three of us will likely have at least five opinions on any given subject, we are still together as one, working to lift up the world around us. We also need our church to be a safe space. If we don't provide a safe space, then there is a tension between fitting in and sticking out, between belonging and freedom. True safe space is only possible when one is comfortable that they aren't going to be challenged for doing something, quote, not normal, unquote. And incidentally, there is no such thing as normal. And ask me about that later, I'll tell you a story. The implications of our maintaining a safe space are that we accept people as they are, as long as they are willing to try to be moral and ethical people. And of course, our seven principles guide us in that process. In fact, we need to expand our ideas of being a safe space. Our American culture is infamous for seeing difference as a bad thing. But most indigenous peoples look for difference as an opportunity to honor and respect, because being different gives you something special to offer the community. Because our traditional Western European culture often rejects difference, many people hide their differences because they have been taught that being different is a bad thing. We should warmly welcome people who are different, and by being open about our own differences, we can show visitors, friends, and new members that in our community, being different is respected and honored. Being rooted, especially emotionally rooted, also helps us to know what is important, because our emotional connection to others tells us what is working in our community and helps to warn us if something is broken. Our sharing our joys and concerns, our hopes and fears with one another creates trust and a caring community. And with adequate trust, people often feel safe to bring up something that bothers them or has them upset, rather than letting it grow or holding it among a small group of friends while it festers in secret, which is the bane of almost every church. You may have heard me say how important coffee hour is. We tend to think of it more as an opportunity to enjoy each other's company after church, and that's great. That's a really good thing. But there's more to it. because coffee hour is the primary place and time we come together to connect with one another and hear one another's stories and learn what is going on in one another's lives. It's the primary place where we create connection and community. Our services are great, but without community, we're just a bunch of people who gather to hear some music, readings, and a lecture. Joys and concerns also strengthens community because we are expected to not directly respond to what is shared. It is actually a safer place to share than coffee hour, where someone might thoughtlessly, I hope, respond in a way that makes someone who shares uncomfortable. We tend to be pretty free-form at coffee hour, but we still need to be thoughtful and sensitive with our comments. In fact, sharing from our own experience in relation to what some say is a I'm sorry, let me do that again. In fact, sharing from our own experience in relation to what someone says is a great way to support one another. Directly addressing someone else's sharing of a concern can make them feel uncomfortable. Another place that becomes conversation, a relationship, is church work parties. I'm sure some of you think, oh, I don't want to work on cleaning the church, cleaning up the yard, cleaning out the flower beds, put in your own chore. But working with others on the church is another sharing of time together and helping one another. We talk and laugh and help one another at work parties and accomplish something for the church, which makes us feel valued and appreciated and gives us a sense of accomplishment. Plus, we usually go out to dinner after work parties, which is yet another opportunity for sharing and connecting. And our dinner out after work is important enough that if your life is financially challenged, please touch base with one of the board members before the event, and we will make sure your dinner is taken care of. We won't leave anyone out of social events because of money.
Have we scheduled the cleaning party yet?
We're due about now, actually, now that you mention it. Faye will take care of that. And our dinner party out after work is important enough. Oh, I already read that. My apology. In her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, Robin Wall Kimmerer talks about picking wild strawberries when she was growing up and also picking them specifically for her dad's birthday. And how it felt like they were a gift from the earth to her and her family. She says, gifts from the earth or from each other establish a particular relationship and obligation of sorts to give, to receive, and to reciprocate. The wild strawberry field gave to us, we gave from it to my dad, and then tried to give back to the strawberries. When the strawberry season was done, the plants would send out slender red runners to make new plants. Because I was fascinated by the way they would travel over the ground looking for places to take root, I would weed out little patches of bare ground where the runners touched down. Sure enough, the little roots would emerge from the runner and and by the end of the season, there were even more plants ready to bloom under the next strawberry moon. Because they had given us a gift and we tried to reciprocate, an ongoing relationship opened between us. To really understand what Kimmerer is saying, it helps to understand that indigenous language have a different ratio of nouns to verbs than English. In English, the ratio is about 30% verbs to 70% nouns. But Potawatomi, for instance, has 70% verbs and 30% nouns, because in Potawatomi culture, almost everything is alive. But when we think Western sensibility, it's not alive like we are alive. We set humankind apart as different, above all other life. But with the Potawatomi, everything that isn't something man has made is alive. Not just a strawberry patch, but also a lake, or stream, or bay, or rock, or mountain. And Potawatomi live in relationship and even reciprocity with all of these living things. It's such a different mindset that it's hard for us even to imagine. So when Kimmerer says she had a relationship with strawberries, she's making a very serious statement. Remember that before we got to Kimmerer, we were talking about relationships and how relationships connect us with our community. Most of us have no relationship with nature. Our pets or walk in the woods as close as we get. Even our pets we don't really think of as part of nature. This makes it, although Sue may, because she's got one of those little wild, what kind of dog do you have?
Jack Russell.
Yeah, one of those. kind of wild, she says. Our pets are a walk in the and adorable. Our pets are even our pet. Let me get back to where I'm supposed to be here. I'm sorry. This is something I didn't practice with stopping and then getting starting over again. Potawatomi nouns and verbs don't differentiate gender as English usually does. Instead, they differentiate animate and inanimate. You express that you hear a person with a word that is different from the word with which you express you hear an airplane. So I guess you might do, oh, I hear the airplane, but I listen to a person because we have to process the listening. But that's kind of probably not a great comparison because it's not really animate and inanimate entirely. Anyway, I don't know. You express that you hear a person. I'm sorry, I just did that. I'm doing that again. Kimura says, pronouns, articles, plurals, demonstratives, verbs, all those syntactical bits I could never keep straight in high school English are all aligned in Potawatomi to provide different ways to speak of the living world versus the lifeless one. She continues, I remember paging through the Ojibwe dictionary my sister sent. After looking through the book for a while, the pages blurred and my eyes settled on a word. A verb, of course. To be a Saturday. Nonsense. I threw down the books. Since when is Saturday a verb? Everyone knows it's a noun. I grabbed the dictionary and flipped more pages, and all kinds of things seemed to be verbs. To be a hill. To be red. To be a long, sandy stretch of beach. And then my finger rested on wi'ikwi'ga-ma'a. And that's probably not right, but that's the best I can do. To be a bay. Ridiculous, I ranted in my head. There is no reason to make it so complicated. No wonder no one speaks it. A cumbersome language, impossible to learn. And more than that, it's all wrong. A bay is most definitely a person, place, or thing, a noun, and not a verb. I was ready to give up. I learned a few words, done my duty to the language that was taken from my grandfather. Oh, the ghosts of the missionaries in the boarding schools must have been rubbing their hands in glee at my frustration. She's going to surrender, they said. And then I swear I heard the zap of synapses firing, and an electric current sizzled down my arm and through my finger and practically scorched the page where that one word lay. In that moment, I could smell the water of the bay, watch it rock against the shore, hear it sift on the sand. A bay is a noun only if water is dead. When bay is a noun, it's defined by humans trapped between its shores and contained by the word. But the word wi'ikwi'ga-ma'a, to be a bay, releases the water from bondage and lets it live. To be a bay holds the wonder that for this moment, the living water has decided to shelter itself between these shores, conversing with cedar roots and a flock of baby mercancers. Maybe it could do otherwise, become a stream or an ocean or a waterfall. And there are verbs for that too, to be a hill, to be a sandy beach, to be a Saturday. All are possible verbs in a world where everything is alive. In English, we never refer to a member of our family or to any person as it. That would be a profound disrespect. So it is that in Potawatomi and most other indigenous languages, we use the same words to address the living world as we do to address our family, because they are our family. Traditional indigenous people, and that's the end of the quote, traditional indigenous peoples live in connection and reciprocity with the world. And when they take something from the world, they consider it a gift from the world and give back as best they can. Reciprocal gifting. When we share our joys and concerns, talk and share about our lives at coffee hour or during a work party or after at dinner, or bring and share food with one another, a pitch-in, we are gifting our lives to one another. Nothing enriches our lives like sharing them with one another. We can talk about projects, church repairs, how good or bad the food is at coffee hour, but what really enriches our lives is when we share what we care about, what we are struggling with, what we are worried about, what brings us joy. Liz, in her sermon, The Anatomy of Trust, based on the work of Renee Brown, talked about vulnerability. Being vulnerable with one another creates trust and intimacy. These are our gifts to one another that establish our relationships, that includes a reciprocity through sharing stories back and forth, and it creates strong community. Many LGBTQ+ people have experienced sharing with a group about being whatever version of LGBTQ+ they are. And after the meeting, someone will come up to them and tell them about their aunt who is lesbian or cousin who is trans. But first they will say, I've never told anyone about this. Sharing your life invites others to share theirs, and welcoming someone out of a closet, no matter why they are in that closet, is a major gift. I spoke of safe space earlier. As you use, we don't tell one another what must be believed, what we should think about people who are different in this way or that. In our middle school, high school religious explorations classes, and in the occasional youth conference with kids from many congregations, we always start with a covenant of how we are going to behave with one another. And one of the first things that comes up is safe space. If the kids didn't bring it up, we would, but they always do. To have a strong sense of community with one another, one must feel safe to say whatever pops into one's head. The kids take it further, inventing things like ouch oops, where if I say something that you find offensive, you would say, you would say ouch, and I would say oops. And if I didn't understand what I said, why what I said was offensive, I would ask for clarification. And in RE and at youth cons, the level of caring is extraordinary. If someone is sitting alone, someone else will get up and go check in with them to make sure they are all right and almost certainly sit with them. In her paper, The Disconnect Between Unitarian Universalist Youth and Adults, Unitarian Universalist Ruth Hinkle described what happened after she bridged from the youth group to the adult conversation. She says, I never expected to feel like an outsider in my old congregation. Yet after I bridged or graduated out of youth groups and headed for the adult services each Sunday morning, I did not feel welcome. It did not seem to matter that I knew most of the congregants or had been attending that church since I was four, but I took my discomfort stoically and persisted in weekly Sunday attendance. I didn't realize that I was lonely until a high school friend approached me one Sunday morning. He gestured to the empty seats around me and asked why I was alone. I didn't have an answer. I often sat alone. His question reminded me that Unitarian Universalist youth do not let each other sit alone. To do so is considered a breach of the community's bonds. Let me pause from the quote and say that again. To let someone sit alone is a breach of community bonds. Since my friend's question, I thought often about the implications of my loneliness in my home congregation. I wondered how new people could feel welcomed into a church if I felt lost. I originally wrote that maintaining safe space should always be there in the back of everyone's mind. But then I thought about when I go down to coffee hour and the first thing I do when I enter the fellowship hall is to look around and see if any new or second or third time visitors are sitting by themselves. So I guess I should say keep maintaining space in the front of your mind. Another one, we should, if all possible, avoid talking about church business during coffee hour. Visitors usually, for some reason, aren't interested in how we run the church. Can we be as good about safe space, vulnerability, trust, intimacy, and caring as Unitarian Universalist youth? I think we are already a lot further along on our journey towards that caring than most UU congregations, but we still have work to do to make it something we just do instead of something we have to keep thinking about. We need to keep thinking about it and remembering and reminding each other until it becomes part of our church culture. One of the things that comes out of being a truly safe space is that we have the opportunity to be a sanctuary, small s church. Not in the sense of sanctuary churches that take in migrants, or at least not necessarily that, but a sanctuary for people who want a truly safe space, a safe community. The LGBTQ+ community got clobbered this week. You likely know that Indiana passed a law forbidding affirming medical care for transgender children and youth, which was quickly stayed, blocked, by the Indianapolis Federal District Court. This week, a 3-judge panel of 11 members of the Seventh Circuit lifted that stay. This means that transgender health gender clinics will close, therapists will be limited in how they can help their clients, families with trans youth on hormone blockers will have to go out of state to get their medications, and will likely have to go out of state to get new prescriptions. And many states are passing similar laws to stop trans adults from getting gender-affirming care. The trans community is under attack, and we can offer our safe space, our sanctuary space, for those needing loving care. If we so choose, we could do something similar in the area of supporting people needing abortions. And besides those needs, there are lots of people who, post-pandemic, are feeling lost, depressed, because they haven't found post-pandemic community. I want to tell you what I noticed when we stopped doing Zoom services and invited everyone back to the church. Before the pandemic, after church, we would have a number of people come down to the coffee hour, and if there was not much food, just snacks, in 15, 20 minutes, everyone would be leaving. If there was food, it might be 30 to 40 minutes. After all, food lubricates conversation. But the first few coffee hours after we stopped Zoom, most people came down and they stayed and they stayed and they stayed for like an hour and a half or maybe a little more. One of those services shortly after we started in-person services, there was a Sunday when our then minister Joel and Sue Pittman and myself and a couple of other people were sitting and talking. And someone looked around at the clock and it was 2:30. Post-pandemic, we were hungry for face-to-face conversation. We still are, as we are often here well past noon. And a lot of other people outside of the church are still hungry for face-to-face conversation, but don't have a coffee hour to come back to. And maybe even feel the pain of loneliness and don't realize what it is that they are missing. We can be a sanctuary for those people as well, a safe space where they can share their lives. To do this, and especially to do it well, we have to become a, quote, middle school, high school RE, quote, end quote, and, quote, youth con, end quote, safe space in terms of how we treat one another. And I really think we can do this. Being excited about what is going on at church, and I hope seeing the church in a different light from a different perspective, where through sharing our lives with one another, strengthening our community, we all become gifts to one another, and that these changes encourage you all to give in giving back to the church. On the 17th, the service will be offered by Eileen and I, and will be a little bit about where the church has been and where it is going. It will also be about what we want to do, what we want to become, and how we accomplish getting there. As one of our favorite hymns, "We Laugh, We Cry," says at the end of the last verse, "Even a question surely is an answer." And we expect to have lots of questions and hopefully find some answers too. At this point, one might ask, what makes this a pledge sermon? We certainly need your financial donations to keep the church facility going, but we also need people to help out with various things, people to simply come to services, which aside from hopefully making you think and feel new things, also is a gift to all the people who make the service happen, and also to the people who do all the work and other things that keep the church running. We also need your talent. We need at least one new board member, and we should really get someone who can learn the treasurer's job. Jeff has documented what he does, but it will be a lot easier to learn with his personal guidance. He personally helped us out last year by coming back on the board, but we all know he would rather be doing climate activism. We also are getting lots of suggestions on new things we might do, but your board is pretty much out of bandwidth for new things. So the service on March 17th is a service workshop to talk about people's suggestions, ideas, hopes, and about how we implement some of the good ideas we're hearing about. The subject of this sermon has been about creating strong community. Everyone knows that a pledge drive is about raising money. We also need strong community to help us do the old things that keep us going, but especially the new things that will help us grow. Right now, we are at the tender place where we are bringing in new members and friends, but we need more energy to implement the ideas that you all are bringing forward. This church should really be about social justice, helping others, working on the environment and climate issues, helping us to be better people and other things to help the world. It's really up to you all, both in terms of what we want to do and what we are able to do. So please give generously of your treasure within what your household budget will allow, of your time to help us with all that needs to be done to keep things going here and to implement new ideas, and of your talent in whatever way you're able. And when you get downstairs to coffee hour, please, as you share with one another, think of your sharing as gifts you offer and receive. Thank you for listening. Whoops. Pardon?
You steal all my prompts.
I know. I am. I went to pick my other half of my sermon up, and everything came with it. I think that's just fine.
I hope many of you were taking notes or sparking thoughts, and that you bring those back with you on the 17th for the discussion that we can have together. At this time, we're going to do our offering. We know that financial contributions to this congregation come from sacrifice and hard work. We are so grateful for this and commit together to ensure the funds we gather collectively do a greater good for ourselves and our world than they could have done alone. For those of you who would like to give, there is a QR code for donations on the back of your bulletin. As well as each month, our congregation chooses a local nonprofit to support with our offering. This month, our nonprofit is Misty Eyes Animal Center, and my description of Misty Eyes is on that paper. Give me just a second.
This month being March,
yes.
What was last month?
Last month was February. This is a good quiz for me. Last month was the Hendricks County Food Pantry Coalition. I got the words in the right order. This month we are switching over to Misty Eyes Animal Center. It is the mission of Misty Eyes to end the needless euthanasia of domesticated pets throughout Indiana, to reduce owner surrenders, and to teach responsible pet ownership and kindness towards all living things. I will note, too, as we do have a new nonprofit every month, if you have a suggestion for one, there are 12 months in the year, and we do not currently have 12 nonprofits. So if you would like to suggest a nonprofit for later this year, we would love that. In addition, would also like to note that whether in community or with others, as an individual, we all know that active, tangible expressions of love, justice, and peace are what make a difference. So, as a reminder, every Sunday we also collect food donations towards a local food pantry. As you are able, please consider bringing in non-perishable items and placing them in our collection bin. Once a month, we will deliver these items, and it looks like we just delivered them, so we have to fill up the bin again. For our meditation, Nancy is going to be playing for us Return to the Heart.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. For our jurors and concerns today, our community cares about the significant challenges, successes, and milestones that impact your. It is time now for our final hymn. It is hymn 123, Spirit of Life. If you would like to rise, embody our spirit. Logan is particularly excited by this hymn, not at all because of what it is, but because the number for this hymn is 123. So take that excitement and that joy that you have and put it into our singing of Spirit of Life. Yeah, it is. Nancy, are we starting immediately or are we joining after an intro?
Yeah, I just remembered I have to do the intro.
Okay. When you start singing, we'll sing along. Our closing words today, let us go forth into the world through a door of hope for the future, remembering these words by Martin Luther, even if I knew that tomorrow the world would go to pieces, I would still plant my apple tree. So may it be with us. Go in peace. But not very far. Go downstairs and talk with us. Yes, there is a recorded postlude that will play for us. Can't go too far. That's what I told her. I was like, you gotta have some sympathy for these people that only get